Good afternoon. I have to say it's good to actually see some people here because it's kind of ironic with the all the accessibility panels being in this room, and it's arguably one of the most inaccessible rooms here. I mean, did you come up by the lift? Crazy. So you've all got here. Fantastic. We're going to fly through quite a lot here, so we'll just keep it as brief as possible in the introductions. I'm Ian. I have a site called Accessify.com, and this is Patrick, who can be found at splinter.co.uk. Patrick works for Salford University in Manchester. We're going to be using his site in some of the university site in some of the examples today. And we're both members of the Web Standards Project Accessibility Task Force, otherwise known as the WASP ATF. First, a little bit about what. I'll just go right next to the microphone. First, a little bit about what we're not covering today. We're not going to be going through the fine details of WCAG 1 or 2. You won't hear any reference to any checkpoints or priority or anything like that. We're not going to be covering any expensive tools that you have to pay lots of money for. And we're not going to go into anything too advanced or experimental. So what we are covering is we're going to demonstrate a few tools that you can use for free to help you on your way. We're going to look at some evaluation tools that you can use in your browser to just see how accessible your pages are. And we're going to be doing this mostly using pre-recorded screencasts. And given the somewhat flaky Wi-Fi here, I have to say, with hindsight, that is a good thing. So I'm going to kickstart the first part where we're going to look at a few tools on accessify.com. I'm going to just show you the table builder, a form builder, and list-o-matic, just to give you a feel for some of the tools that are on there that you can use. So kicking off with the table builder. If you go to accessify.com/toolsandwizards, and that's with hyphens in case that wasn't clear, and it's the first link on the page. So we click on the link and we can get started with building our table. There's a bit of preamble there. Just you need to know, obviously, how many columns you've got, how many rows you've got, what the table headings are going to be. One thing I will mention, it's only going to create fairly simple tables. There's no row span or col spans or anything like that involved here. So just sort of setting out the scene here. And okay, so the first stage, what do you want to do? Is it a simple table or a complex table? If you're not entirely sure what the difference is, there's an explanation there that you can follow. And it's really a case of, are you using scope attribute in the table headers, or are you going to use the slightly more complicated headers and IDs? For this example, we're just going to go with a simple table, pick a color scheme, and continue on our way. Okay, so the next stage, you get a graphic here just explaining one of the things on here about where the position of the last header row. Have we got two header rows, or have we just got the one? How many columns do you need? We're going to say four. We're going to say that the first column contains headers, but in this example, we're going to uncheck that option and keep it as simple as we can for the purposes of the demonstration. Give yourself a few rows to play around with, and the last header row is position one. Okay, so now you can start beginning to create your table. You need to put in a title attribute, the title here, which will create a caption element. And in the next field, we have the summary attribute. This will create for you the summary attribute of the table tag. And I'm just going to speed on the movie just a little here, just to speed up my typing. So you can create the table headers like so. Okay, so we're nearly done. The table's nearly built. What it does has recognized, though, is that the table header on a couple of them could potentially be abbreviated. So we're going to just show you how that works. So you can just edit those and insert those changes, and you'll see the result in just a moment. Okay, so there's your table completed, and you can see the summary attribute has been put in automatically for you. The caption element is there, and then we've got the table headers with the titles that we put in earlier, and as you can see, the abbreviation attributes for the home and the work contact numbers. So very quickly, you can create a nice accessible table. One thing I should mention, though, is first of all, there's a class first column that you could style if you wanted the first column to appear differently but not actually be a table header. The other thing is that it automatically generates odd and even classes. So if you want to style alternating rows, you can do that. preferable way probably to do it would be using JavaScript, and we can't show that today, but there are various techniques out there that you can use to create a dynamic alternating row colors. So the next tool we're going to look at is the Form Builder. Really, really simple tool. And just go back up to the Accessibility Tools menu, and it's the second link on the page. And you've got a choice of CSS or table layouts. I think you know which we're going to go for. No table layouts here. Okay. Really, really simple. What form fields do you want to capture? You just type them in here. Again, I'm just going to speed forward just to save time. So what do you want? Type it in there. Just carriage returns. What do you want to have as the form legend? And there's an option there to include title attributes. Now, what that will generate is a title attribute on the form input that just describes what the form input is, and it picks up the values that you put in the first box. It's optional. I probably would leave it out now because the screen reader user is probably able to find this information out anyway, but it's an optional thing. So you can see that we've created the form there with the label elements correctly linked up to the text. Sorry, linked to the form inputs. And by default, it gives you an input size of 20. That's just an arbitrary value that was chosen. Again, you could edit that if you so desire. We'll just have a quick look at the form then. It's unstyled, but the basics are all there. And if we click on the text, we can see that it's generated the labels correctly and it's putting the focus on the form inputs. Okay, so that's the second one. No. I could have put these things in, but just try to keep it simple. Okay, and the last one I'm going to just demonstrate for you is Listomatic, which generates list-based navigation because all the cool kids are doing it. Okay, come on, wake up. There we go. You have to just step up a couple of levels on this. Go to the Tools and Wizards page and scroll down a little way, where you will find the link to Listomatic. Okay, so what have we got here? How many links do you want? Do you want title attributes in the links? That, again, is another optional thing. If you want to put the title attributes in, it's just so you can expand the text there. Again, I'm just going to speed forward a bit here, so you just imagine I'm typing really, really fast. Okay, so you can see that it's fairly simple. What's the link text? What's the link title? If you want it to expand upon that a little bit, and the destination. So let's let that carry on there. That wasn't meant to happen. Where were we?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. I've done it again. I will get there. Right. Step away from the keyboard.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're presented now with your unformatted list. It's not completely unformatted because it's inheriting some styles from the page that it's contained on. So the bullet points are missing there. But that's your basic unstyled list. You can now pick a style from the gallery there. We've got horizontal or vertical styles. And how do you want to reference this? You can reference the navigation by ID or class. The default is for ID. Suggest leaving it like that. And I'll just move that out of the way. So there's the list. Really, really quick to do, and it creates everything for you. Nice standards, web standards, compliant HTML. Now you have the title attribute that we put in, and if we scroll down, we can see the CSS. Now, obviously, you can edit that and change that and tweak it as you like. But if you really want to change it completely, you can just simply step back one, choose a different style, go forward again, and bingo, there's a completely different style on the list there. So just a few tools really to kind of give you a few sections on the page that give you a head start. With that, I'm going to hand over to Patrick, who's going to tell us about evaluating accessibility with Toolbars.
Yes, as I said, we've just seen a few tools that just really give you a quick way into just a shortcut into building certain things in the right way. What about if you're getting a page from somebody or you're asked to evaluate a page and you really just want to get a quick feel for, is this page accessible or does it feature certain kind of characteristics of an accessible page without having to go into the markup and kind of analyze it all, or without picking out really expensive tools that kind of give you reports. So what I'm going to have a look at is just using the web developer toolbar and using using it just to kind of pick out certain things on pages. So headings in a page, headings and accessibility. Headings, as you should know, are important. If you've got a big document with like loads of sections, it obviously screen reader users can take advantage of the headings. They can get an overview of the document. They can navigate directly to the various documents, various sections of the document. Not just screen reader users, users that rely on keyboard navigation and using things like Opera, for instance, that's got built-in capability to actually jump from one heading to the other. So that just makes it easier for the users to kind of navigate your large documents. So how can you use the web developer toolbar to check for the presence of headings without having to kind of rip the page apart? So fairly simple, just any page, outline headings, and it will just give you an overlay. It'll just outline them right there and then in the page. So that gives you a really quick way just to at least check, right, the author has actually used headings. If you want to be a bit more specific about it, you can actually get the whole view document outline. And whatever page you're on, it basically picks out, I found these particular headings on the page. It gives you a list that says no heading text there because it's not actually picking up the text itself was actually the alt attribute of the image on that previous page. But it gives you the big kind of outline of these are the headings I found, and you can kind of flick backwards and forwards. Then it opens in a new tab. You flick backwards and forwards between the visual view, the graphical view, and this one, and you can basically check, are the headings all in the right place? Does this look like the correct outline for that particular page? So not just headings, it's obviously with talking about semantic markup, using the right elements to do the right job, really. Why is that important? Well, some assistive technology doesn't really take advantage of all of the kind of semantic markup, all of the various elements, but it's the right thing to do, you know, explicitly saying what the various pieces of content are, and hopefully at some point the AT will catch up with that. But again, a quick and easy way to check that the kind of the correct elements are in the page without having to break apart the source code with the web developer toolbar. So say we're going to a particular page, in this case, one of our press release pages, and we want to check in this case for the presence of has the author used any kind of abbreviation elements. So we can outline custom elements if the option isn't there yet, like it is for headings. So we can put in up to 5 elements. Say we want to check for the ABBR element, and it outlines it right there again visually in the page without having to go into the markup and actually rip it apart and kind of do find to kind of look around the page. JavaScript and accessibility. We're not going to go into the whole diatribe of JavaScript is evil or not. In certain cases, it is quite useful. It can be kind of enhance usability, and in certain controlled situations, it's quite all right to use JavaScript. But say you want to check on a page that, say, is on your widely available outward-facing kind of internet site. You want to check, does the site work for users that, for whatever reason, haven't got JavaScript enabled in their browser or it's not available to them? Again, with the web developer toolbar, so I've got a page here on the Salford site that does use a little bit of JavaScript, and there is a warning there at the beginning as well. All it is, it's a big kind of graphical montage, and as you're kind of moving your mouse over the various kind of elements, it brings up a little kind of tooltip-like description of what these various elements are. Now, that obviously uses JavaScript. What happens without JavaScript? So we disable it, we reload the page, and we see that, yes, the kind of the visual effect that the JavaScript was doing is obviously not happening. But what does happen is that is an image map. And as you click through the various kind of numbered links, and you could also do this with a keyboard, it jumps down to the appropriate part. And there's this long kind of numbered list with all the various kind of bits of text that before used to appear. So it does work without JavaScript as well. So there's a bit of progressive enhancement kind of going on when the page loads. And just to show that again, re-enable JavaScript, reload the page, and you see that that number list isn't there. So it's kind of, there is JavaScript happening right at the beginning that hides it and then brings it up when you mouse over the certain kind of elements. Ian already mentioned, labels for forms, why they're important. Obviously, if you're using something like assistive technology, having actual labels inside your markup really unequivocally ties the text to your form elements. So as you're tabbing from one form element to another, the AT can actually pick up that particular text without having to use heuristics and thinking, right, there's a bit of text before it. Also, usability-wise, it's good for not just users with screen readers. It can be useful for all users. If you imagine things like small checkboxes, if you actually got a label element that is associated with, say, a checkbox, it makes it a lot easier for users to click on that, because when they actually click on the label text itself, it kind of checks that checkbox. So it's a lot easier even in situations where, you know, the checkbox itself might be a little bit too fiddly. So again, what does the web developer toolbar give us in terms of, you know, forms? There's a whole kind of little menu. We're going to look at, on the Salford side, just this really, really simple search box at the top. You can get a display form information that kind of overlays it right there in the graphical page. It might be a bit difficult to tell what's going on there because the actual page styles are kind of affecting that display. So you can disable the actual CSS and then do that function. And you get kind of a bit of information of, are there any hidden fields? Are there actual labels, etc.? As before, we can also get a far more kind of, get a separate report in a separate tab that gives us a breakdown, whatever page you were on, how many form elements it found inside the actual form itself, what are the various elements, the various kind of text inputs, etc. And it gives you a breakdown, and you can also check there is a column there in the breakdown for label. So that's another way to quickly kind of go through your forms and make sure that the ones that need a label actually have a label. Alt text, that was mentioned in a session this morning. Again, it's perhaps the easiest one, but perhaps the most difficult one to actually say authoritatively, yes, that is good alt text or bad alt text. We're not going to go into any of that debate. We're really just going to look at using the web dev toolbar to actually check for the presence of alt text without actually giving a qualitative, yes, that's good or yes, that's bad. So picking up, again, the Salford website, the homepage is quite kind of heavy on graphics and is actually using image elements in that page. We want to quickly check, are there actually alt attributes there? So we display the alt attributes, and we can see, again, as before, it overlays it straight onto the actual styled page. This can cause a bit of problem because, again, you're picking up half of the styles of the web dev toolbar and half of the kind of the page styles. Again, if you disable the styles for the actual page while you're doing it, it gives you a nicer kind of view, obviously provided that you've used kind of a CSS layout. It kind of linearizes it and breaks it down a lot easier. You could go through this and kind of check every time you find an image that the alt is appropriate. You could, once again, also get a separate report, which is kind of on a different tab, and that pretty much just goes through your page, picks up any images it found, and shows you like various attributes linked with those particular images, and one of those is the actual alt. So you could print this out, for instance, if you wanted to. If you have loads and loads of images, you can kind of do it offline. But that's a quick and easy way to kind of go through your page and make sure that, you know, alts are present. There are other options in that whole images kind of drop-down menu. You could also outline images that are missing an alt or images that have been assigned an empty alt, etc. So there are quite a few kind of ways of dealing with images with the web dev toolbar.
Now, so we did actually have a larger section for the other tools, but just simply because of time, we've had to cut this down. But just one tool I wanted to demonstrate was a service called graybit.com. this is one of my personal sites. I'm just going to quickly run through it. So you put your URL in the box there, hit the button that says make it gray, kind of gives away what it's going to do here. So we'll see what the effect is. It takes a little while to render it because it's always got to change all the images and convert them to grayscale. But you can get a good idea of the color contrast using this tool. We just do a quick comparison there between the original and the black and white version there. And check the menus. Yeah, everything seems to be okay. So it's a nice quick service that you can run your site through. And another good feature of it is that once you're actually in there, you can carry on following the links in your site and it carries on through. You don't have to keep going back and, you know, putting the URL in and going forward each time. So, it's a quite a handy little tool to use. So we'll get to that.
Yeah. Like I say, online tools, you obviously all know, I would hope, the markup validator. Again, I thought I'd just put a slide up there when, again, not going to go into the whole philosophical, only sites that validate are accessible and vice versa. We're not going to touch on that. Obviously, there are situations where a site that might not validate is still accessible, and a site that validates might be completely inaccessible. This just means that you're following the grammar. So it's always a good way to, you know, a good basis to start with is checking that you're doing the right grammar. Whether you then break certain things knowingly because of certain situations, that's then up to you to test. Ian mentioned Graybit for color contrast. Obviously, that's a very subjective way of testing for color contrast, because you're still, you as the tester or you as a developer, you go through and you eyeball it and say, yeah, it's all right. I can tell the difference. If you want something a little bit more authoritative in terms of, you know, it looks at numbers and stuff, Jez Lemon, good friend of ours, he's created a little extension for Firefox. Again, you install it, any page you're on, you get it from the context menu, color contrast analyzer, and you can run two separate tests or do a combined test. And what it does is it basically scours your CSS. It goes through and tries to understand any color combinations that might happen on that page. And it looks for basically the foreground and background color. If the kind of the ratio, the contrast ratio falls below a certain number, then it kind of flags up as a failure. And that will be then something that you might want to address. Online checkers, I mean, probably all of us have heard of, you know, the infamous Bobby, and there are various other similar tools like Cynthia Says and et cetera. They all pretty much kind of go through the page, your markup and stuff, and test it against WCAG. We said we're not going to mention it, but there we go. So it tests your page against, you know, the various checkpoints, et cetera, which is fine. One tool that I've recently come across with, which takes a slightly different approach, is the Functional Accessibility Evaluator, FAE. Again, it's an online tool similar to all those other tools. You put your URL in and it gives you a report, but this report doesn't actually go through, you know, the various WCAG checkpoints. It goes through its own kind of internal set of what they call best practices, which are a bit dubious. If you don't quite agree with them, that's fine, but it just gives you a different view. For instance, here I ran the Salford site through the validator, and it kind of warns me that there is a failure there in my navigation and orientation. And as I'm digging further into it, you can kind of go into further levels. It tells you what was actually wrong. It's basically warning me that because I'm using a lot of ordered lists and unordered lists, there should really be, if it's a navigation, there should really be a header in front of that, presumably that says navigation. Now, again, I would completely disagree with that one, but these are the kind of tests that it does. So just to say, there are tools out there that don't just check against WCAG. This gives you a slightly different view, as I say, make of the results what you will. And a really quick kind of mention of, we've almost touched upon that previously, something that a friend of mine, Bruce Lawson, and I kind of dubbed unobtrusive accessibility, just to jump on all the bandwagon of, you know, hijacks and, you know, progressive enhancement and everything else. So unobtrusive accessibility, which really is, you know, a lot of us developers, I see it in my day-to-day job. We want to do the right thing. We want to do, you know, accessibility and make sure that our pages work. But sometimes, or quite often, that clashes with, you know, the idea that the marketing department has, the idea that the site designer has. You know, they're very precious about, you know, I like my site a certain way. You're not going to put this feature in there. So basically, just a little what to do in those kind of situations. So doing the right thing without your boss noticing. Really simple. It's only three cases, and they all pretty much boil down to the same thing. We've already seen the search box on the Salford website, you know, top right. It is looking at it purely from the graphical point of view in the top there. It is reasonably obvious to kind of somebody who's used a few websites that, you know, the first one, you type in your search term and then you got your search button. But what if you said, well, I really want to put a label in there that kind of makes it really explicit, so that, say, somebody with a screen reader comes along, gets focus on that, they actually know what to do. So if you actually take the styling off that page, you'll see that there is actually a label there. And all of the trickery is that you just use a bit of CSS to kind of hide it from normal view. Now, there is obviously the whole discussion of don't use display none, because some assistive technology then doesn't actually see that at all, etc. But we're not going to go into that. But just, you know, hiding form labels, they're still there in the markup. You're doing the right thing, but then you're kind of taking it away from the kind of default view. So nobody will complain that why you're putting that there, it doesn't look nice. Similar approach, skip links, again, whether you agree with the idea or not, that we're not going to go into that debate. But say you got a lot of navigation, etc., coming before your content, and you think, okay, well, I might put a skip link there, so a keyboard user might take advantage of that and kind of jump straight to the content. However, say the designer says, well, I really don't want you to have the skip link there. Yes, arguably, you know, people will say, yes, skip links to be useful. They need to be there. They need to be visible. And you want to make sure that, you know, those people who need them can actually see them. But again, it's in contrast with the designer. So what to do? Here we got an example, on the Web Standards Project website. I mean, it's using a technique that I first implemented on, I did a redesign for Molly Holzschlag. I did her design, and Andy Clark kind of quite blatantly nicked my technique. So there you go. So you got the page here. That's the graphical view. But on your first tab, assuming that, you know, it would be keyboard users that get the most use out of this, on the first tab, when you get to the page, you actually get a skip link and it appears. So it basically only appears when you actually tab to it. Now, this is actually an early version of my technique, which also works with a mouse. If you're moving the mouse towards the top of the screen, that still appears. I've kind of refined it since then that it pretty much only appears when you're actually using a keyboard. So again, your boss or your designer might actually not even know that that's there, but users that might need it or might take advantage of it would more than likely find it. And because it's in a logical place as well, right at the top, that is pretty much the expected place where they would find it. And again, another kind of hidden technique. I'm using, say, this is my personal site. I'm using three tables to just show like news, projects, and experiments. This is obviously a table. If you look at it, it becomes pretty clear that, say, on the news one, the first column is the news title and the second column is the actual date when that news item was posted. You might say, okay, well, I want to make that relationship explicit. I need to put something in the markup there. And if you take the styling off the site, you actually see that there is a table head there. So the columns actually have column headers properly marked up. It's all there in the markup. And once again, using CSS to kind of hide it. So it basically boils down to, you know, you're doing the right thing. You're putting the stuff in there and then you're kind of hiding it out of the default view.
And we're done. So thanks to everyone for coming along. I'm sorry we couldn't. We had lots more to do here. But time is not on our side. If you want to learn a bit more about accessibility, a couple of good resources you could try is the accessifyforum.com or join the mailing list at webaim.org. If anyone wants to come and ask us any questions after the session, just feel free. And if anyone needs their little flyer stamps for the competition of the book, just come up and see me.
Yeah.
Thank you.